Hi, I'm Rob, and I'm here with Kate.
Hi.
Welcome to the Backseat Imagineering Podcast. We are two lifelong Disney fans who love to share our opinions, experiences, and insights about all things Disney with you.
Plus, we're both teachers, so we love to talk.
Okay, welcome to episode 4 of Backseat Imagineering. Very excited to be on episode 4. You might have noticed we did not have an episode last week. We had some minor crises in the household that we had to take care of, so we're sorry to leave you in a lurch, but we are back this week with episode 4. So remember, wherever you're listening to our podcast, you can like, subscribe, or drop us a 5-star review. You can also reach us on Twitter at BackseatImagine or by email, BackseatImagineeringPodcast@gmail.com. We love hearing from you guys. Mm-hmm. News this week. Sadly, we lost a shining star this weekend in Chadwick Boseman. Condolences to his family and friends. Obviously, this is just a fun podcast, and nothing else we're going to say today is as consequential as the passing of such a huge influence in the industry. His impact is going to be felt forever.
Mm-hmm. And especially so young. That's so tragic.
It is. In other news, new pillars are outside Epcot entrance. I love these new pillars. If you haven't had a chance to see them, take a look on Twitter or find an image online. They're beautiful glass pillars out front of Spaceship Earth. One of the things I like most about them is that they have the geometric designs from old Epcot.
Yeah, but I think if you glance at them, they look a little Elsa's Ice Palace to me. I mean, we have a Fisher-Price, like, little people Elsa's Ice Palace that I'm pretty sure has the same basic, like, snowflakey designs all over it.
That's fair. That's fair. Although I also like that ice castle. So aesthetically speaking,
yeah. I don't know.
I'm fine with it. I like any reference to old Epcot, so the geometric designs coming back and getting rid of the old entrance with those big stone, gray stones outside was, I think, a big improvement.
Yeah, so definitely.
I'm happy to see that. Okay, pass or fast pass this week. So this week, our focus is really going to be on the Animal Kingdom. And so pass or fast pass actually has three parts this week.
Okay.
We're going to pass or fast pass on Pandora, Everest, and then Dinoland USA / the dinosaur ride. So we're going to do all three together.
Okay.
You ready?
Yeah, I'm ready to go.
Okay, so let's go first. You can go first, and I'm going to say pass or fast pass on Pandora.
I'm a pass on Pandora for sure. I mean, I guess I'm not really qualified to make this decision because I've actually never seen Avatar, which I think I might be the last person left who haven't seen it. But I feel like it's a little bit random that they would do a big Avatar land. Like, I feel like that's one of the kind of, I feel like that's the kind of reference that I would drop in my classroom and I'd have a bunch of like 22-year-olds staring at me like, what's Office Space? What are you talking about? And then, you know, then I just move on thinking, okay, maybe that was a weird reference to make. But it's weird to do that, like, on a, like, a multi-million dollar, like, park level. It's like, oh, hey, remember Avatar?
I get that. Yeah, it struck me as really odd. I remember when they first built it because the movie was already fairly old at that point. And when I first heard about it, I don't remember having heard about any sequels.
Yeah.
Now, they've since announced sequels, so maybe the IP is going to be more popular again. But it I think it draws a very important distinction between a property like Star Wars, which already had this huge fan base and is so enduring generation to generation to generation. Pandora hasn't felt like that.
Yeah.
And maybe it's just the circles I run in, but it hasn't felt to me like people my age are turning around to kids and saying, oh, you have to watch this Pandora movie, you know, Avatar that we watched when we were younger. You'll like it so much. So anyway, I definitely had that. I have to disagree, though. I will say Fast Pass. Now, I tend more towards giving Disney the benefit of the doubt. But I was pretty blown away by walking through Pandora, being in that environment, seeing that element of fantasy brought into the natural world in that way. I thought that was very neat. The floating mountains were very neat. I like the Navi River Journey. I have not had the guts yet to do Flight of Passage, but I hear Flight of Passage is an amazing experience. So someday I'm going to get up the nerve and go on Flight of Passage because I've heard it's maybe the best ride, second only to Rise of the Resistance at this point, that Disney's ever built. So just from a fan standpoint, I feel like I have to ride it.
Yeah. It's long story short, we will give you our opinions, even though we're obviously not qualified to be passing judgment on this whatsoever.
Well, I feel though, just from the experience of walking through Pandora, seeing mm-hmm. the colors, seeing the lights,
yeah,
I really appreciated the value that Imagineers can bring to a property, even a property that I'm not a huge fan of, when they take it from a movie or some other inspiration and turn it into an environment that I can be immersed in.
Yeah.
That to me is an amazing experience. And I want to say that I would give a lot of leniency, sort of freedom, to any property they want to do that with, having now done this with Pandora.
Mm-hmm.
Before, I felt very much like I was so familiar with all of the material that I really appreciated being immersed in those areas. Pandora is the first time Disney has done something where the source material is not something I feel a connection with, and yet I still walked into that environment and was blown away.
Fair, but I wonder, does that raise the question, like, does it need to be IP? Or was there a room somewhere where they're, you know, thinking, like, we want to do a sort of off-planet, ecological, different thing, and they had to slap a movie on it, even if it's kind of an old reference?
So I think there was probably two parts, and this is just me guessing, but I know that they were interested in Pandora and Avatar pretty early on and wanted to get in business with them.
Mm-hmm.
I think they also had this theme left in Animal Kingdom around and saw a fit there. So I do think that they were inspired by Pandora and wanted to get in the business of Avatar. I do think that's true. I don't think it was just putting a movie, because they had to go out of their way to get Avatar. Like, mm-hmm. Avatar wasn't something they already had in their back pocket. They had to make some deals to get the IP for Avatar. But that being said, we're going to talk more about that idea of park IP, which mm-hmm. you and I are pretty passionate about, that park IP is a valuable thing outside of what's connected to movies,
yeah.
and what their original idea for Animal Kingdom was. So you're a pass, I'm a fast pass. Okay, Everest. Just to make things interesting. No, I'm going to go first this time. You don't get to go first. I get to go first this time. Okay. Pass. And I don't think I've said that on a lot on this show so far, but I am a pass on Everest. So hard pass, in fact, that I have not actually been on this ride. Okay. If you haven't been listening to the show, you may not know yet. I'm terrified of anything that I think might drop me. Any ride where I'm afraid they might drop me, I don't do that ride.
Yeah. Every time we go on Pirates of the Caribbean, he's like, okay, I'm getting ready for this. And he's like, oh, that's drop. Not as bad. Yeah, maybe. Like,
I think
driving
there,
with you is a little bit more harrowing than Pirates of the Caribbean, but fine, whatever.
There's that drop there that really makes me nervous sometimes. So anyway, you get the idea that I'm not big into the thrill rides. I have heard that the Imagineering done on this ride is really excellent. I've always sort of also been terrified by the giant Yeti animatronic, which is actually still broken and remains broken since like a week after it was installed. The idea of a giant animatronic that is broken on top of a thrill ride is enough to sort of keep me off this ride anyway. So I'm a hard pass, maybe not for the best reasons.
I mean, I'm a fast pass. Everest is fantastic. I love roller coasters, but this is, on top of that, a fantastic, fantastic roller coaster. It really has a great balance of everything. The theming is cool. That, you know, from the very moment you're in the line, you know, you're thinking about the base camp and climbing up Everest.
The story that's being
told. The story that's being told is really, really well done, and not movie IP.
Right, just, that's true.
Just the roller coaster aspect is really, really good too. I like the forward and backward. And if you can manage to get in the front of the car, your view of the Disney World resort area from the top is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. Like, I just love being able to look out, and you can see Tower of Terror, I think. You can see a lot of the hotels in that area as well.
It's the big landmarks.
Yeah, yeah.
And is that from the point where the track breaks?
Well, I mean, it's not just supposed to look like it's broken, sweetie. It's really perfectly safe, and I'm pretty sure they planned it that way. But yeah, so if you're sitting in the front of the car and going up the regular roller coaster hill, at the top of it, you can see the, you know, it makes it look like the track is broken, and that's where you go backward down the hill from that point. You can just kind of track the movement enough. Like, it's hard for me to recollect exactly every, you know, it's like backward and then it's forward. So it's just the right amount of thrilling and chaotic. Even broken, the giant Yeti is pretty cool. Just a neat touch. So as somebody who likes well enough but is pretty emphatically underwhelmed by Mine Train as just being too soft a ride. I think this one's really, really, really excellent.
Yeah, Mine Train pretty much hits my sweet zone in terms of thrill. Yeah. That's about the... I love Mine Train. Okay, but we're not talking about Mine Train. Last and not least, Dino Land, and relatedly, Dinosaur the Ride. So, Dino Land USA, pass or fast pass?
I'm kind of on the fence about this, but I think it's probably a pass, because if I heard that it was, you know, closing, I'd go, oh, okay, yeah, that seems about right. I like the ride in theory. It's a very cool ride. But I had a run of like 3 or 4 times going on it, like since I was, you know, a teenager. I think high school trips, I remember it being new, where I like jerk back in fear strongly that I always throw out my neck on that ride.
Right.
And I don't like things jumping out at me much, much more than I mean, I like the movement of the ride, but I feel like if it were a little, I mean, it doesn't have to be quite as tame/lame as Ellen's Energy Adventure and seeing those dinosaurs. I like the movement of it.
Not at all lame, by the way.
But they do a really good job to set this up as terrifying. And I think a lot of people would enjoy seeing the dinosaurs and having a minor thrill without, you know, really like needing to go change their pants after the ride.
I am in agreement that I am also pass, which may be the first time we both agree to pass on something. Dinoland USA has some neat aspects.
Mm-hmm.
Our niece and nephews like the digging area and the playground area, although we never end up spending much time there. The games always sort of bothered me, like the carnival area games.
Mm-hmm.
They always sort of bothered me. And my mom, in talking to her when I was talking about this episode idea actually came from her. She actually raised the point that it's weird to have to pay to get into a Disney park and then also pay to play these games. That it might make more sense for games like this to be located at Boardwalk or Disney Springs, where kids can still play the games and you can pay for them, but you're not also paying an admittance fee. So I've never really liked the idea of paid games like that in Disney World. I felt like, and the theming is that it's sort of a cheap carnival, but when you're a theme park, theming a land to be like an amusement park, like a cheaper version of yourself, amusement park, there's something sort of strangely meta, and I think actually damages the view of that area, because I don't think a lot of people step back to say this is just theming, or if it is just theming, why is it still costing me money? Like, it's a little bit too immersive at that point.
And I think we haven't been there extensively with our own daughter yet.
Right.
But, you know, thinking of my sister and brother-in-law and their 3 kids, I think it really says something about the discomfort level of Animal Kingdom that they're like, okay, if everybody's just going to calm down and sit down for half an hour, I'll put $25 in these, you know, dumb carnival games. So I think we've had some neat moments at those rides, but we weren't the ones footing the bill. So right. I think I wouldn't
at those games.
We've had some neat moments at those games, but I wasn't the one fitting the bill.
Yeah, I agree. Mm-hmm. And then Dinosaur, the ride for me, I haven't been on it that often. I've probably been on it twice. Both times I got hurt too. Both times I walked out feeling my back was sore and I had a headache from all the flashing of the lights, so I stopped going on it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think you're exactly right. If the ride was go see these dinosaurs with a little bit of thrill, that would be different.
Yeah.
I think they just missed the mark on that one. So yeah. I'm also a pass.
And I know I must have Pirates of the Caribbean on the brain, but something like that is a little bit suspenseful, you know, that you'd be worried about taking a 2-year-old on it who's really going to, you know, so there's a little bit of thrill there. But it's not as immersively terrifying. I mean, the idea that, like, a giant asteroid's going to hit the Earth any moment and we got to get out of here, plus you're being, you know, attacked Jurassic Park style by different kinds of dinosaurs, like, that's just too much.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, that's fast pass or fast pass, and I feel like Negative Nelly today. I've passed on more than I normally do. Now it's time for trip planning from the backseat. Here's a tip that Kate actually reminded me of when we started talking about this episode, and I thought was a really valuable tip. Last time we went, we got a professional photo shoot done at the Magic Kingdom, and these are some of my favorite photos.
Mm-hmm.
we had the whole family. We were all dressed in similar colors. We had a professional photographer. They took us out into a picturesque area that was surrounded by fence that you wouldn't normally see guests, with a really nice view of the castle.
Mm-hmm.
And we got nice pictures of us with the castle without a lot of crowds, even more professionally done than the PhotoPass photographers with Memory Maker. And PhotoPass photographers do a great job, but having this location, there were two people working with us. We got all the different groupings we want, no pressure, no crowds. I will say this, it's a little bit expensive. It's mm-hmm. not going to be in the budget for a lot of people. But if you're already paying for this huge Disney vacation with your family, it's about $279 for a mini session. And the group is called Disney Fine Art Photography. So if you look up Disney Fine Art Photography, you'll find them. And you can book a mini session. It's 15, 30 minutes, but it's enough to get a lot of different group photos. It was a really nice opportunity. And if I can make a suggestion,
mm-hmm.
bring your own camera, because you're in a unique area and they're not going to be taking your picture the whole time. So you will have the opportunity with your camera to take pictures of your family while other groups in your family are having their photo taken, maybe just the kids. Mm-hmm. You can take pictures of your wife in that area. And it's just a beautiful setting with the castle in the background.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just wanted to add one of the creative shots that they did. They had Rob's parents kiss and then the three older grandkids like cover their eyes and like look like they were grossed out in the picture.
It was cute.
A lot of cute poses. A tricky thing is if you're going to be dressing up nicely for a family photo, what you can wear to the park that isn't going to get
all dinged up
or overly sweaty.
Yes.
And I realized I didn't think to pack decent shoes that I would look. I had a nice white dress because we were all doing white and khaki, and I hadn't packed any shoes other than my big like Chacos clunking around Florida shoes. But I did have some pool like flip-floppy sandal shoes that I was able to slip in a bag and not wear to the park, but have along with me to look sort of decent. And it was nice. We went to, we did Park Fair brunch right after that photo shoot. So we all got to go to the Grand Floridian feeling
fancy,
extra spiffy.
Which we got some more nice pictures from. And I'll say that speaks to pick your time carefully. If you do this, pick a time in the morning or in the afternoon where you can either go right into the photo shoot looking nice, or you can have gone back to your room and prepared and then go out for the photo shoot.
Yeah.
I find that if you do a fair amount in advance, you won't have any problem getting a time during your vacation that works for you. So, but I didn't know that I was going to enjoy it or appreciate it as much as I did, and I really did. So I recommend looking into it if you have a chance. It's Disney Fine Art Photography. Okay, Backseat Imagineering. Now for the main attraction. So since the opening of Animal Kingdom, and I don't know if you know this, but when I was in high school, we took a high school trip to Disney. I know you know that. You know we went to Disney World in high school. But I don't know if you knew that it was right around the time of Animal Kingdom opening, and we got to see all the backstage stuff. They took us on a tour, and they showed us a lot about what the Animal Kingdom was at that time and what it was going to be. The different. I mean, there were rides that weren't open yet. Most of Asia, I don't think, was even completed. So we took this trip to the Animal Kingdom. And since the opening of Animal Kingdom, I've heard a lot of disdain for the park.
Mm-hmm.
For a while there, before Pandora, it was considered a half-day park or even a skip-altogether park if you didn't have the days. So I just wanted to discuss what makes it great and maybe what we'd reimagineer about the park if we had the opportunity.
Great.
So first and foremost, I don't know if you know, but Walt, I mean, you do know. You know Walt was a huge fan of animals and the documentary style. And if you go on Disney Plus now, you can actually see a lot of those. And there's even a whole Disney Nature section of the movie-making part of Disney where they do these animal movies. And I love that.
Yeah.
I love the theming of animals and nature. I like the combination, much like Epcot, of the education-entertainment piece. I think that's really, really nice. And the original concept of Animal Kingdom was this place where you would go and get lost. The design of the pathways, and I was trying to find today where I heard this, but I remember hearing this. I feel like it was Joe Rhodes who said it at some point, either in an interview or in a movie, and he was the lead Imagineer on this, and he was talking about how when they designed the pathways, it was a place to meander. It was a place to sort of lose yourself, because the jungle wild has this sense of a lack of organization, right? I placed a jar in Tennessee, that kind of thing. that the idea that that bringing order to things is not what Animal Kingdom was all about, that mm-hmm. that sense of being wild. So I like that. And it differs very much from the wheel and spoke. When Walt designed Disneyland, and then eventually when Magic Kingdom was designed, it was designed so that you get pretty quickly anywhere mm-hmm. from where you were, right? You can go from Tomorrowland to Adventureland relatively quickly by going across the spoke, and you know where you are.
Yeah.
The castle's in the middle. Wherever you are, pretty much you can see where the castle is, and you can orient yourself very quickly. And mm-hmm. and Animal Kingdom has the exact opposite design, which I think throws a lot of people, throws a lot of guests, mm-hmm. because they're used to that. It also makes going to the Animal Kingdom feel very inefficient.
Yeah.
Because sometimes when you're planning a Disney trip, it's all about being efficient.
Yeah. Plus, it takes a long time to get there on the buses. That's right. The other downside to Animal Kingdom, that unless you're in the Animal Kingdom Lodge and away from everything else, it's hard to get there. It's hot once you're there, and it's hard to get around.
Yeah, it's generally considered one of the hottest parks. But I do like that theme. So mm-hmm. I think recalibrating for that theme, there's a lot to be appreciated about that.
Yeah.
I was in my research today, I watched Joe talk about the fact that it's also a park about transformation, that you're supposed to engage in a personal adventure, and in adventure the idea is that you experience something you've never experienced before, and mm-hmm. by doing so you are a different person.
Mm-hmm.
And I really appreciate that about Animal Kingdom, that there is this opportunity, there is this idea that there are parts of Animal Kingdom, despite there being a map, that are somehow off the map, right? You mm-hmm. feel like while you're there, you are off the map, and there's exploring still to be done.
Yeah. And they do a great job with that feel and theming, you know, especially in the morning before it gets too hot. Right. You know, my day at Animal Kingdom involves, you know, walking in, you walk up through Africa, usually because we go to the Kilimanjaro Safari early, right. Before the animals also get too hot and tired. And you're walking around thinking like, oh, this place is awesome. And then cut forward like 4 hours later, you're just like soaked in sweat and like trying to catch like a tiny bit of air conditioning off a open-sided gift shop and, you know, barely staggering back to your car.
Yeah. And that actually goes to one of the points that I think they could have done a better job about. I feel like in all of Animal Kingdom, it becomes very difficult mm-hmm. to find a place to catch a little bit of air conditioning
mm-hmm.
and to get inside, because the theming is about these places where they have a lot of open stalls and open air areas. I feel like it's hard to get a piece of air conditioning and get inside, cool down. Unlike when you're in the Magic Kingdom, there's always restaurants that are indoors, and all of Main Street, you have the big Emporium where you can sort of walk all in mm-hmm. air conditioning, and a lot of queues are all in air conditioning. You just don't get that when you're in Animal Kingdom. And I think that leads to this sort of compounding feeling of heat all day long.
Yeah. I was thinking about this in terms of backseat imagineering. Our zoo, and we live in Oklahoma, so it's pretty hot here too.
Mm-hmm.
Our zoo has a lot of walkthroughs where you go in and out of little buildings with air conditioning. And we really love our zoo here. Yes. And I think even on hot days, just that moment of recalibrating your thermostat could really help. And it wouldn't even have to be in like the gift shop, the kind of like towny restaurant areas that do recreate the feeling of villages in Africa or Asia or what have you. But even on those animal walkthroughs, which I feel like I always want to do, because despite how I've been talking, the heat doesn't bother me as much as other people in our parties usually. I always want to do them, and nobody else does. But I think if they went in and out of air conditioning, it would be a lot more pleasant, and it could be a way to partially cool off.
Yeah, I agree. So I'd like to see them do that. I'd like to see them add more opportunities like that. One of the things I think is funny about Animal Kingdom,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know if you know this, but it's the only park where the bathrooms lock.
Oh.
yeah, exactly. You're already thinking it. It does that because if the animals ever get out, you have a safe place to go and hide yourself. So I thought that was funny. So the other thing I want to talk about mm-hmm. is, how does Pandora fit into this park? Because I think Pandora is definitely different mm-hmm. than the rest of the park.
Yeah, I can see that.
I like the different.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's odd that there's only one very different land like that.
I mean, Dinoland USA is kind of along the same lines of a little bit more fanciful. I mean, there used to be dinosaurs, but still, that it's not present day sort of parts of the world and different animals there.
So the original concept for the park way back when was called Beastly Kingdom, right? And one of the aspects was this aspect of fantasy. And in fact, if you look at the logo even today, the animal silhouette that's right in the middle is a dragon. Mm. Which is a reference back to this idea of the mythical and the the fantastical into the park. So I like Pandora, but my opinion is, if I were to keep doing work on Animal Kingdom, I would add more lands like that. And in fact, if you look between Africa and Pandora on that long walkway to get to Pandora, there's all this open space. And I feel like Disney could really do something to add more fantasy to the park and get back to that vision and make Pandora feel more like it's a natural fit. Like it's an extension of the fantasy as opposed to the only real fantasy that's...
Yeah, you feel like you have to walk off planet to actually make it there.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that's the point. You never know with Imagineers. Properties I thought they could include, just off the top of my head, were Rescuers Down Under, that property. Mm-hmm. The Atlantis property, which if you don't remember, it's kind of this odd futuristic version of Atlantis. Onward, I feel like, is a really easy fit. Pete's Dragon, that's a movie they actually redid. And Zootopia.
Yeah, Zootopia should be, yeah.
It seems crazy.
Yeah.
It seems crazy that Zootopia is not in there. I mean, they have, and Zootopia, the city is actually built like a Disneyland.
Yeah, like
a, yeah. With different themed areas. And you could have a tundra area and everybody could go in there and cool off for a little while. So it seems a little crazy to me that Zootopia is not there. So that's definitely something I would do. I'd add another land or two and pull in some IP that was more fantastical from the movies.
Mm-hmm.
To expand that aspect of the park. And it's odd because it is the biggest park. I mean, I think I've heard estimates that you can fit 4 Magic Kingdoms inside Animal Kingdom, which most people don't think about. And yet, somehow it still seems like, to people, a secondary idea. I mean, aside from Pandora, it's a half-day park.
Yeah.
And for me, when I don't do Everest and I don't do Flight of Passage, and I don't want to get wet, so I don't
you don't
want to
go. Cali River Rapids is awful. It's like 5 seconds. You get all cute, you know, like, okay, what am I going to do with my cell phone? I got to, you know, be prepared to be wet. And then it's like 3, you know, you can get more wet if you're talking with somebody who spits a lot. Like, it's just not that. It's underwhelming.
But you can also get soaked. So yeah. You don't know. Like, I remember when we went with your sister that she just, the water just came over the top of her.
I mean, you'd think with all of Disney's Imagineering that they could have a water ride where you get just the right amount wet on it. Like, I've been on those kinds of rides that are a lot of fun, but something went horribly wrong with Cali River Rapids. Because I think that's the worst of that type of ride, you know, the big round spin down the rapids ride. I think that's the worst of that kind of ride I've been on. And it's that's saying a lot for Disney World.
It's definitely underwhelming. But so when you start limiting the rides I don't really do.
Yeah.
And you look at the rides I do, it becomes a half-day park again. So you have a park that's 4 times the Magic Kingdom, which is a park you and I will go to 2 or 3 times in a vacation if we have the opportunity. And that just seems crazy to me. Now, a lot of that is... It's a conservation park, you know, it's about taking care of the animals, so having space for the animals is important. But I also think they need to do more to bring more IP, more attractions to that park, expand it in that way.
I mean, maybe just a handful of moderate to calm dark rides.
Yeah.
I mean, there's your air conditioning. There's just a little bit more for everybody in the family to do to make it worthwhile. Because I love Kilimanjaro safaris. I think that is such a cool experience every time, and every time it's different.
Yeah, or, I mean, I could even see them doing a living with the land version of Kilimanjaro safaris, where instead of its plants, they actually take you through kind of a dark ride experience of other animal exhibits or things like that. Even if, you know, a mix of real and animatronic, who knows? But something... Living with the land where you're on water and you're looking at animals, or you're learning something like they do in Epcot. Like, Living in the Land on paper looks like a terrible ride.
Yeah.
And it's a favorite of mine. I love Living with the Land. And I think there's a lot of people out there who like Living with the Land because it's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, maybe something like what they did with the Seas with Nemo and Friends, where it's a large part animatronics, cool. Maybe something kind of kids family oriented, but then with windows like glass that opened up onto the safari lands.
Yeah.
That could be really cool. And the mix they did with the
aquarium and the projected animation.
Yeah. I mean why not a Lion King sort of thing?
Yeah, and they have the Festival of the Lion King, yeah, the show, but I agree. I think more Lion King in the park is needed.
They keep building. The Voyage of the Little Mermaid is relatively new, and right, that's just a movie.
Part of new Fantasyland.
You know, and having a young daughter, those are fantastic rides because, you know, she's going to be excited. You know she's going to like it. And then everybody gets to sit and cool down without unloading $25 on dumb carnival games.
Carnival games. And when you look at it, Animal Kingdom doesn't really have a lot of those rides that we say, oh, yeah, we can bring our daughter on this or we can bring our daughter on that. Aside from the safari and the river journey, there's not a lot else she can go on.
Yeah.
Which is just so weird for a Disney park.
Yeah. I mean, we haven't talked about Bug's Life inside the tree.
But it's still a show, not really a ride.
It's still a show. And again, it's just like a little bit more intense than it needs to be. Yeah. You know I went through a phase where I was terrified of that. And I had cousins who were younger than me who, you know, made their parents leave because it does get pretty intense.
Well, yeah, spiders come down on top of you.
Well, and the bees sting. That's right. What got me. The hornets or whatever stinging you in the back. Like, that's a lot. Spoiler alert.
If you haven't done it yet and you're listening to this podcast.
I was like, I thought I liked Animal Kingdom, and now I feel like, you know, I think I like it quite a bit less than I thought.
I will say this. I like what I think Animal Kingdom is intended to be and what mm-hmm. it could be. And I think that if you recalibrate yourself away from the get to this ride, get to this ride, get to this ride of a lot of the other parks, and instead go into it with this idea of I am going to go into this park and I am going to wander and I am going to appreciate
mm-hmm.
the atmosphere and the nature and the wilderness of this park, I think it can be a very enjoyable experience. However,
I was going to say, it's comical to think about those words coming out of your mouth after walking around in 97 degree heat in the humidity. Like, you're ready to...
Especially on a Disney vacation.
Yeah.
Where I feel like I go into the whole vacation from a perspective of super planned, super organized. Yeah. Everything's on a spreadsheet. We have times for everything. To then switch gears. And maybe that's something I need to look at and say, yeah, I need to be able to do this better. But it's hard to switch gears and say, okay, this park is not about that.
Yeah. But the problem with wandering is if you're doing Disney vacations right, you only have a limited number of steps before your body starts breaking down over the course of a week. So do you really want to spend them walking, you know, past the moon all the way to Pandora? Or do you have better, you know, better plans for your steps?
So here's my new plan. I'm going to make a program called Couch to Animal Kingdom just so people can get ready, like Couch to 5K,
yeah.
Just can train for the Animal Kingdom experience. All right. Well, that does it for us on our fourth episode. Thank you all for joining us. Have a great day. Remember, if you listen to us on Apple or any podcast service, go ahead, like, subscribe, give us a 5-star review. We really appreciate it. And reach out anytime because we love hearing from our listeners. Have a great day.
Mm-hmm.